With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu. With new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
I really was confused, seriously perplexed, to put it mildly. And that's how I first saw those ancient stone megalithic statues. I damn near passed out because when I saw the first one, I had such a strong sense of deja vu because I'd been there many times as a child in my dreams.
Robert Stanley is a writer, an author, a researcher, and a really interesting person. I found out about him from Bruce Gernon when we were talking about the Bermuda Triangle and Bruce's experience with electronic fog. He told me about a time shift experience that he feels as he goes into the electronic fog. At least that's what he's figured out. You'll have to listen to Bruce's interview to find out the details because it's his story, not mine. And so I will get all the details wrong. But Robert Stanley hopefully has all his details right. Because this story that I was fascinated by was about a pilot who actually landed in a different area, completely off the grid, a different dimension. So you don't have to focus all on that story. But Robert, that was what got my attention. Hello.
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for having me on. So yeah, on my Substack, anybody wants to read this, it is robertstanley.substack.com. And then scroll down to the headline is A Trail of Two Timelines. That is something that reminds me of Bruce's experience, except it's far greater, what you just alluded to, that a military pilot allegedly went into some sort of electronic fog when he was doing a test run over the Pacific and ended up, both of the engines failed, the radio failed. He made an emergency landing on an island that was not even on a map. And it just gets weirder from there. I don't want to go into all the details. You can read it for yourself. It's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 pages long. Apparently, the pilot is somebody I'd known for years who had a weird experience at Area 51. That's how I knew him. And then one day, we were just talking. He goes, I told you about the time that on the island, didn't I? And I said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And he goes, oh. And then he starts telling me, I said, hold on a second. Can I record this? Because I'm not going to remember all these details, you know. It was very, very, very weird. But then, as you'll see in that article, it's more of a report, really. But, I mean, it's not just his testimony. I found that there's, like, other people that have had, like Bruce, but I mean, around the world, it's not just the Bermuda Triangle or out of the Pacific. These portals, or whatever you want to call them, seem to be all over the planet. And most people never come back when they disappear, but some people do. In fact, I was really surprised. And I don't even know how this works, to tell you the truth, Wendy. I'll sit down to do a project, and then like little bits and pieces sort of just fall together. There's a serendipity there. I had no control over it. It's kind of a cool thing, but I really not sure I understand it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And you've collected some really interesting stories. Once I started reading your Substack, and then the most recent one is about experiences you had with finding these stone statues. And
oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I grew up in Malibu back in the 60s. It's when I moved there when I was like 2. And I had a lot of recurring dreams, lucid dreams, actually, of being with either the Native Americans, they call themselves the Chumash Indians, but then there was also this other group, which didn't look like Native Americans. They looked like Greek, in the sense that they wore these robes, sandals. They had boats and stone cities, and I could not relate that to my area. Because there was no context for it. It wasn't part of the historic record, right? At least not that I knew growing up.
Yeah.
Up until the time when I was 1985, I was working as a security guard down on the beach for the wealthy people from Hollywood. And there was a young boy there who ran into a sliding glass door face first and was bleeding to death. I ran over there to assist. And in the process, it turned into a paranormal experience in that the boy, I believe, was possessed, and by, I guess, I don't know, no other way to say it, spiritual parasites. I know there's a lot of different names for them. Again, in retrospect, this all makes a lot of sense, but at the time, I had no idea what was going on. So it was very shocking. And I need to kind of zoom past this and let, just to say that as a result, the boy lived. I got the paramedics to come out very quickly, which saved him. But in the process, I believe that the parasites, which were, I actually saw them briefly in the room, which was weird as heck. But I think they started attacking me. That's what it felt like. So I ended up going, that night was the fall equinox. And September 1985, I go up on top of a mountain that night, and I'm praying, meditating, like my life depended on it. And I was really only focused on one thing, that was love. I had an out-of-body experience, and the reason I was focused on that is because I felt that what I had experienced that day with that boy was, you know, people that are possessed, that that's evil. And also because it felt like there was a blood sacrifice going on there. And anyway, so I go up on the mountain, I'm meditating, have this just bizarre out-of-body experience where I left my body, went into a realm of light. I met a being that looked like Jesus, and he was radiating brighter than the light we were in. And he said he was the Father. And because I was really curious, like, well, I couldn't even believe this happening. It was so weird. I was literally went from the darkest dark to the lightest light, and all in within 24 hours. And the reason I'm telling you that is because that's how come I went back up to the mountains later. I was looking for him, the Father, to ask him some questions because I was really perplexed. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I really was confused, seriously perplexed, to put it mildly. And, that's how I first saw those ancient stone megalithic statues. I damn near passed out because when I saw the first one, I had such a strong sense of deja vu because I'd been there many times as a child in my dreams, in my lucid dreams. I would go there specifically. I knew where it was because, okay, so in a lucid dream, what it means is you know where you are. When you're in your dream, you're like, I'm at my house. Oh, I'm at the beach. No, I'm at my school next, you know, the elementary school. Or, oh, no, I'm near the Point Magoo Naval Base. I remember that place. It was kind of stuck in my head. So anyway, I knew exactly the orientation of where I was. It's just it was shifting, like, from modern times to the Native Americans to something even older. And when I was in that mode with those people, I called it my night school. I went there so often, and there was like temples there, stone temples, and some of the people were giving me instructions or information, I guess. So anyway, when I set foot in that place in 1985, I was just absolutely floored because I thought it was just my imagination. And then to be standing there looking at that stuff. So I spent a lot of time early on there just looking around and kind of taking pictures and talking to people and showing my friends and stuff. And then I started going up at night for some reason. And what happened then was right above Point Magoo Naval Base was started having close encounters with UFOs at night. And it happened many, many times. Sometimes they would actually beam the light down on us. That happened more than a few times. And that place later became famous directly off the coastline there, Point Magoo, is what most people, they still think that is a underwater UFO base, which is very misleading because of what Google, some people took those images from Google, which are not even photographs. Those are scans from satellites and that are then rendered into images that we can relate to, but that they're not photographs. Okay.
Okay.
Just so you know, and they could be heavily manipulated. If you've ever used Google Earth, you know what I'm talking about. So there was a whole conundrum there. I was pretty upset. MUFON decided they wanted to plagiarize one of my articles about UFOs in Malibu and make all these sensational claims about this underwater UFO base out there. And so here's what I learned over many decades now, is that there was some sort of ancient civilization out there. Most people just call it Lemuria. And that was just like Atlantis. It was destroyed for whatever reason. It's still unclear. But I believe they're the ones that made those stone monuments a long, long, long time ago. But the fact that there's still UFO activity there, I think that's been going on forever as well. Historically, I think it's indisputable at this point for those who are interested in the subject matter. There's plenty of information about that. So getting back to the pilot who gave me his story about how he vanished for 6 months and was on this. It was like he was on Earth, but he said there was no planes going over. There was no ships coming by. There was stuff that had washed up from other shipwrecks and stuff, but he couldn't call out. And the people were very friendly Polynesian-like people, but there was something obviously weird going on. And then they could tell that he just couldn't handle living there. Because he wasn't from there, obviously. And one day they said, okay, it's time for you to leave. And he said, what do you mean? I told you that when I first arrived here, I need to go back to base and report to my commander and my unit. So they took him out there on a raft. And, he said they left him there and they took him past the reef and they said, you're going to be okay. And he had a radio with him in the life raft that came with the aircraft. And they left him there. And he said, as he was watching him paddle back to the island, he says the whole damn thing just vanished in a flash of white light. And then he started his radio and he was able to send a message or, SOS or whatever, emergency call. And eventually he was picked up by a freighter and taken back to Hawaii where he was debriefed. And the reason I'm telling you that is because we talk a lot about other planets being at a distance, but there's obviously ways that these portals, I don't know if they're going to a different time or another universe altogether, but they clearly exist.
I just had an interview with a guy who is owner of a quartz mine in Mena, Arkansas. They saw beams, which kind of got the whole thing started. They'd never had any paranormal experiences of any kind, but they have two types of activity for sure, Sasquatch and UFO. And it changes the magnetics that if they have some just regular old fence poles that are magnetized after some kind of an encounter. And this time, the most recent one was December of 23. He saw a light. Native Americans had gathered to do a meditation. He said about 2,000 people he thought were on that call. Well, they asked him to go set up the TV. So he set up the TV. And at some point on the hill, he saw the light. The hill lit up. So he ran to the place where it was lit up. And walked into a portal. And when he walked into the portal, there was a guy with him who was worried about what was going to happen to him. The guy followed him. The two of them ended up having totally different experiences. He saw people or beings, he said, tall beings. There's more to that story. I talked with him about it a while back. And what he said was that at some point they said, you need to go back. You don't belong here. Which is good. And so he came back. He and the friend lost, I think, an hour and a half. They lost time. Mm-hmm. And then the friend had an experience where he was in a maze, couldn't find his way out. So he was walking through a maze and he was in the company of a Sasquatch who looked after him and then delivered him back. The two ended up in totally different spots on the property and remet where they had originally been standing. So the portal thing describes this because he just walked into the light and was in a completely different place. And I don't say universe, I don't say, dimension. He's in a different place. And I ask him, was it a different dimension? He says, I've never been, I don't know. That was honest.
Yeah, they don't teach us that in school.
It's like, okay, what do we call it? But that's, I think you're correct because there are other stories throughout history of people. Picnic at Hanging Rock, the woman who wrote that, she saw traveling on a train at one point in her life, not fiction. She looked out the window and saw a period that was before her time. 20 or 30 years of people dressed in old clothing, the whole nine yards. And, you know, these stories are part of our history. It's just we have no clue how to contextualize them and, you know, quantify them, qualify them, explain them. But we have to keep talking about them.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping that at some point we can navigate them with some assistance from these beings from other dimensions or worlds or universes, whatever you want to call them, because there seems to be a quarantine embargo on us. And it's pretty obvious why. I mean, look how we're treating our planet.
Yeah. Yeah, we're dangerous. Right.
We're each other. Yeah, we're really, really are. Okay, but in my opinion, I don't think that was an accident. I think that was deliberately that we were turned into what we are now. I don't know. I don't want to open up a too big a can of worms about that right now. I'm trying to summarize that I don't think we've ever been alone. Some malevolent beings have definitely been here for a long time, manipulating mankind and for ill.
I don't think it's just one. I think there are multiple. And
okay. Well, look, from a Christian perspective, this is called the war in heaven. The various angels, a third of them fell out, or they were kicked out of heaven. Wherever that may be, I don't think it's this universe. However, I think this universe came into being so that the fallen ones, had a place to go. But it wasn't going to be heaven. They just couldn't hang out there anymore. They weren't welcome. They were rebelling and causing a lot of trouble. So they ended up being here. And this particular realm is, some people think of it as a lower realm. It may be. I don't know. But it's definitely not. It's not heaven. And it seems to be that, at least on this planet, the dominant force is the dark side.
There, unfortunately, you write about that on your Substack.
I do, and it's only because, like I said, I experienced it, and I know it's both. There is a dark side, but there's also the bright side. The thing, it's not funny, but I mean, this sounds so crazy.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's enough to make you feel crazy too. But the bottom line is that, to summarize, the war in heaven went on for a very long time, and that the insurrectionists, the rebels, were so obsessed or committed to the path down the dark side that everywhere they went, they were destructive, parasitic. And so there had to be a countervailing force. And so this is where these so-called archangels come in. Now that I don't think they have wings, but that's kind of beside the point. And yes, they do have bodies. They can take on different bodies. They can move in and out of different dimensions. That much is obvious. Those of us who experience it, it's really obvious, kind of mind-boggling. But, okay, so the reason I'm bringing it up is because my understanding at this point, to summarize, is that this is over. It's over. This planet is the final fortress to fall. Of theirs, because everywhere they went, they not only were destructive, but they would set up shop, you know, like an empire, an evil empire, but also a fortress, highly militarized. You know, you can see how they operate. Our modern military is something that they taught us. In the Book of Enoch, it says that they taught us how to make and use weapons of war. So they've been doing this for thousands of years here to us. I'm not sure that if we were indigenous or we were brought here as part of a purpose for like a rehabilitation to show them, hey, look, this is how real normal people actually, in case you forgot, this is what normal people are like. And obviously, and the reason I say that, I know it's as weird as that all sounds, is that they obviously have lost their humanity. They really don't know how to behave. And, when you're working with people like that, a lot of times you have to literally demonstrate to them what is normal and what isn't, because they've forgotten or they simply refuse. So the bottom line is this. I believe that, and this is also mentioned briefly in the Book of Enoch, I believe they did appeal their sentencing that was passed. And let's just roughly call it the court of heaven. There are something called God's laws, which are immutable. Even though that they appealed, these fallen ones appealed their sentencing, all that did was prolong the inevitable. And that's one of the reasons that they been able to continue to operate here with relative impunity. I mean, at least as far as we're concerned, we're not in a position to judge them yet. I think that will be coming as part of the final judgment. Humans are going to testify against the fallen angels that have been here for a long time, doing a lot of harm.
There are several elements that I have seen and in various interviews come across common themes. One, John Foster, who's an experiencer. He's in his mid-80s, mid to late 80s.
Yeah, I know John.
Okay, all right. And he talks about the Book of Enoch as well and saying that's where a lot of his information dovetails and he was taught and it makes sense. So he's in that court. Ingo Swann said that the NHI's non-human intelligences that he was in contact with were not friendly. And now he's in a whole different level because he was doing the spying for the military. So he has a different kind of agenda and interaction. And then there's also Pat Price, who remote viewed on his own just because he was curious and he was incredibly gifted as a psychic and a remote viewer. He came in and dumped the papers on the table, said, yeah, I decided to go take a look around the planet for UFO bases last night. And there are four. Okay, and so finally, Skip Atwater has released the book with those remote viewing sessions from Pat Price, and then they went back in the 80s, and he had several remote viewers as a test to see if they were any good and if the bases were legit. They went back, and they looked, and they also got corroborating evidence for these bases, and they're listed, and I've asked him, well, what's come of that? Well, nothing. And I interviewed Paul H. Smith, remote viewer. He was one of the people who went back to, without knowing what he was being targeted or tasked with, that he went back and he corroborated some of that experience, that initial experiment that Pat had, that they set up to see if Pat Price's stuff held any weight. This stuff is fascinating. And there are so many people like you who've had these experiences that make you think, well, you know, this has to be crazy because there's nowhere in our history, nowhere in our education that in any way, shape, or form validates this. But the other people who experience this are validation.
Yeah, there's a common thread that runs through all of this stuff if you look for it. But then again, you have, that takes a little bit of courage and tenacity. At least it used to be a lot harder. Now, obviously, with the internet, it's a little bit easier, but I think the censorship, I mean, who knows what they're going to try and pull next, but as you saw this week, the Internet Archive was taken down.
I missed that.
Have you ever used it? Okay. Internet Archive, for people who don't know, it's part of the National Archives. It's a digitized version of the National Archives, and anybody can put their stuff there more or less. I mean, they have restrictions, but it was a massive website. I would find things there. I would put things there. It was an amazing repository of data that was digitized, and somebody hacked into it this week, and now it's offline.
Really? Internet Archive? Yeah. Wacky Wayback Machine?
No, not the Wayback. No.
Not that one.
It's just called, I thought it was just called the Internet Archive.
It is, but there's a Wacky Wayback Machine that's under that as a subset. Okay. I know because it helped me win a lawsuit.
I believe it was archive.net.
Internet Archive is nonprofit and it's fantastic. It's fantastic. The stuff, what happened was that I was asked to provide basically proof of my existence and my origination of content. And the people who were suing me had implied that it was theirs. Basically, they were wrong. So that particular case was listed. Some legal professor picked it up and said, this is textbook of why you don't go after somebody with basically fake facts and try and insinuate because of whatever you want to say that your information is valid when the fact speaks for itself. It was wonderful. I'm like, I was shocked because when that happens, you have no idea what your legal standing is, except you try to tell the truth. And that's what I did. But the Wacky Wayback Machine had the content of what I had produced. They didn't know that.
Yeah, I understand. I know what that is. Okay, so we're talking about, what I mentioned is called us.archive.org.
Okay.
And I just clicked on something to see if it's working again, but I expect that there's going to be more censorship and pushback from the dark side as we get closer to their ultimate eviction from this planet. They have to go. They have to go, because otherwise they're just going to kill all life on this planet.
Robert, we're talking about the same thing. Internet Archive, because I just pulled it up. The news published 2 hours ago as we're talking. Wacky Wayback Machine returns only in a provisional read-only manner. And the cyber attack against the Internet Archive, it's still not fully recovered. So pieces of it are back. But yeah, you're so somebody did hack it for whatever reason.
Hey, let me summarize it this way. This is, and I don't like this analogy, but it seems to work for people. So here in America, when slaves were brought over in ships and put into plantations, mostly in the South, it was illegal to teach them to read and write. And the reason being is that it makes it harder to control people when they're educated or well informed. And so you can see they're still trying to do that to us in large measure. That's why you have whole libraries were destroyed in the past or hidden from the public, because they don't want us to be. In fact, you know, honestly, because being in the information business, I was shocked. I've been an avid reader since I was a child. I was actually reading music before I started reading books, but I was really shocked to find out most people don't read. And if they do, they read novels. And we're talking like 5% of the population is, and that's just a rough estimate. But so there's a lot of functionally illiterate people on this planet, and that is by design, in my opinion.
I agree. It's intentional. It's how can you distract people enough to get them away from paying any attention to what's going on? It's not difficult.
I'm not complaining. I just want to explain to people that somebody brought it up to my attention recently. They said, you know, Robert, your stuff is too in depth. You're giving us too much information on that. I'm like, how is that possible? What are you talking about? Well, that's because I'm prejudiced. I have a bias. You know, that's the way I look at things. I want to know as much as possible about something. That's just my nature. But most people on this planet are not like that. And so that's, for example, the situation in Washington, D.C. that most people still don't know anything about. Mainly because the mainstream media will not report on it. And believe me, I've tried. The largest audience I've ever had is Coast to Coast AM.
And that's a good audience,
It is, but it's preaching to the choir. That's not really moving the ball down the field, in my opinion.
No, it isn't.
It's better than nothing, but it's my... So I have been reporting and researching and reporting on the hidden history of UFO activity in allegedly controlled airspace in Washington, D.C. since 2005. Yeah. Published my first article in July 2005. Black helicopter shows up at the house. Days after that, it's published. And we went from there. It was this weird kabuki theater thing that they're like saying, no, there's no threat to national security. And I'm like, then why did you send a military helicopter to my house? You know? And you don't want to talk to me. You just want to play games like that. So anyway, unintended consequence, after I published the first article with the photographs of UFOs swarming over the Capitol on July 16th, 2002, which was the 50-year anniversary of July 1952.
Right.
Right. So they send the helicopter, kind of freaked me out. And then I thought, wait a second, if there's nothing going on, why did you react this way? So I started looking into it, right? I told you that's how I am. And pretty soon I had 30, 40. I mean, I started with 1952. I was reporting on 2002, so what's going on in Washington, D.C.? I'd already worked as a professional researcher, literally writing reports, not only for Unicus Magazine as an editor, but then I ended up going to Honda Research and Development and working in their futures department as a researcher there. So we were summarizing all kinds of reports. And that's where I learned how to do timelines in order to analyze, what do they call that? Repeating patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I started doing that for Washington, D.C. Pretty soon I had a timeline from 1850 to 2006. And there was over 200 reports. And I'm like, that's weird. How come nobody wants to talk about that? I mean, granted, they weren't all as dramatic as the summer of 1952, but there was a lot of amazing stuff that had gone on there from people from all walks of life in the nation's capital, seeing stuff that is just like, you know. And there was also a commonality to all of the reports that the craft they were seeing, they might have used slightly different language, but the phenomena stayed the same. The people's perception has changed. Ultimately, I realized this was too much information to write another article. That's how I wrote the first book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I interviewed a lot of different military people for it. I learned a lot about Washington, D.C. that I had no idea actually was taking place.
Now, this book's on Amazon. I just want to mention that real quick. And I've got
You can also, if you don't mind reading a PDF, you can download it through my Substack. At the top there, the article at robertstanley.substack.com. Just go click on the article. You could handle the truth. And scroll down, and you'll see the links there to download the the second book. I thought I was done. I really thought I was done. But when I got the first book done, I went on a coast to coast for the first time. I've been on now like, I don't know, at least 13, 14 times now since then. But after the show, people emailed me and said, Robert, the photographs on your website are missing. I'm like, that's weird. So it was late, you know, it's a very late night show. In the morning I get up, because I'm my own webmaster, I thought I would just re-upload from my computer to the server for my website. But I was unable to do so. For some reason, it wouldn't go. And I'm like, this is weird. So I called the people, the web hosting company, and I said, hey, I for some reason I can't do this. And they said, okay, no problem, hold on. And then they go, wait a second, we can't get into the server either. What did you do? And I'm like, I didn't do anything. And they go, we've never seen this before. So long story short, I found out who did it. It's the back door. This is very common, by the way. The back door was created by a software company in Herndon, Virginia. Coincidentally, they just happened to have their software, backdoor software, on that particular server. And they locked the server so that I couldn't upload this thing. And I ended up having to move to a different company. And that got my attention again. It's like, okay, so you really are worried about these photographs, but you don't want to tell me not to publish them because you claim it's not a threat to national security. I was willing to just let it go at that point to tell you the truth, but not really. It really bothered me. So I was casually looking in. I mean, I'd already published over the 200 reports in the book, but I had a feeling there was something more specifically. Oh yeah. Because I had read in the public record and also talked to a retired colonel, Colonel Wendell Stevens. He's deceased now, but he told me, yeah, he said, yes, the military went around confiscating all the camera and film from 1952. Because I'd asked him, where is it? It says right here in the public record, there was hundreds of people on the mall, National Mall, taking pictures and movies. You know, and there's we only have a couple things. Anyway, so I found out that Walt Disney actually had broadcast in 1995. They had broadcast on a show promoting their new ride down here in Disney World here in Florida. They were promoting a ride for alien encounters, and they had a few seconds of UFOs buzzing around the Capitol at night. So it was hard to get a copy. It was a terrible copy. So I called up, I was still in Los Angeles at the time, and I called up Disney Studios, and I spoke to somebody at the legal department, a lawyer. I believe he was a lawyer. And I said, hey, I know you got this stuff. I've seen a copy of it. It's really not very good. I said, is there any way I can get a better copy from you? No. well, is there any way I could actually see this in person in your library? No. Uh-huh. Okay. I said, do you know who owns this? And he goes, no. As we're having this go nowhere conversation, I hear helicopters coming towards my house. I'm thinking, no way in hell this is, they're not doing that again. I hung up the phone. I ran across the street. Well, I know why, because it was so loud. This time, the first time it happened, I was in the house and it was just a single rotor black helicopter. Not a big deal, but it was shaking the entire house. This time it was shaking the whole neighborhood. I ran out of the house to across the street and I watched two of the double prop helicopters literally come over my house, perform a maneuver that looked really dangerous, because it was not only were they low, but the way that they tilted in unison, If they had screwed up, we all would have died. The rotors would have gone everywhere. I mean, it would have just been a terrible, stupid waste of life. Anyway, scared the crap out of me. I'm standing there with my mouth open, and then they went back. They straightened up, went down the street, just like they had the first time, literally down the street above the telephone poles, that low, and then turned around and came back. And so I was able to get a picture. Both times as they were leaving, I took pictures of things. But the reason I'm telling you that is because unintended consequences, once again, when they did that to me, it really, really scared me, because I thought, I don't want to know what they're going to do next. Because this is not good. I mean, those two helicopters, that was frightening. And if they're planning on doing something, if they're going to up the ante, I really don't want to be at the receiving end of that, whatever the hell it is, because there's probably some extra constitutional law that they're operating under. And at that point, I really wanted to give up. However, I realized that nobody else wanted to touch this story. They still don't. Most people, I should say, really, really don't want to deal with this. So I started digging even deeper. Just like the first time the helicopter came, here's what happened. I ended up writing a second book. It took me a long time, a much longer time. But I ended up over 900 reports from 1850 to 2010, I believe. And I found a lot more pictures and movies in the process. So I really blew the lid off it. And fortunately, they haven't done anything to me yet. Here's the reason I bring that up is because they know where I am, who I am, what I'm doing. And they know that I have been ineffectual, that I'm not reaching the general public. I'm not creating. In other words, here's the thing. Back in the 50s, the CIA put together this something called the Robertson Panel in Colorado. And the conclusion was that UFOs are not a threat to national security. However, the public's perception of UFOs is. So that's when they came up with this plan to, let's just call it social engineering. That's a polite way of saying psychological warfare. But they basically have been controlling the narrative. I mean, they really have. And they used to use intimidation, which obviously worked. They control the media, naturally. And so they obviously have something to hide. And again, they don't want us to panic. That was something that if you're familiar with the Brookings Institute,
their
report. Okay, so back, they told NASA, when they were getting their charter, look, we know you're going to find extraterrestrials and or their artifacts as, you know, different missions go off planet. And we strongly recommend you do not divulge this to the public, because it has the potential, in their opinion, to destabilize society. Well, in my opinion, the only way that could be is if they find out conclusively that some of these entities are malevolent, because if they're benevolent, who gives a damn? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, you know, you might have a couple bad days where your brain is hurting, you know, your paradigm is shifted or whatever, but unless there's an actual credible threat, I don't see why this really would unravel society.
That's the problem, because once people realize there is another presence, then the current authority, loses its control. That's really what it's about.
Yes, they do. One of the things that I did during this time period frame of investigation and reporting was I put together a internet poll, and I asked people, because it is international, right?
Yes.
I said, hey, would you be okay if benevolent extraterrestrials landed on this planet? Would you be open to that? Overwhelmingly, the public said yes. But I would have to say, if I was able to pull people at the Pentagon or Washington, D.C. directly, I think they would have overwhelmingly say no, because judging by their actions, they don't want us to have open communications or interactions with benevolent extraterrestrials. Otherwise, I think it would have already happened by now. And clearly, there's two sides to this situation. So, again, from a Christian perspective, they say the God of this world is Satan, or Satan is the God of this world. And that just means the adversary. Satan just means adversary of God. So clearly these fallen angels are here. They've been here. They're manipulating us genetically, spiritually, mentally, you know, all that. And it seems to me what their final end game is to, and it's not going to work, but I'm just saying, they can no longer create divinely, so they use their satanic science to create profanely artificial or synthetic biology. Not just artificial intelligence, but artificial life forms is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to put this in terms that's not going to upset people, but there's really no polite way to talk about this. And I know it sounds crazy to people who've never heard this before. They probably think I escaped from a loony bin, but that's not the case. I'm actually sane, and I live a normal life. If you met me, you saw the way I live. With, you know, I'm married. I have a son. I have a dog. I'm actually very grateful to be an American, having traveled to 59 countries so far, and lived in Hong Kong for a few years. I can tell you, I feel blessed to be an American. I know it's not perfect, but the foundational documents, the ideals that America stands for or originally was founded on, to me, that's it's an incredible blessing. It really is. It's not like that in other countries. It's not like that at all.
Well, going back into the information you got in terms of your book, and this is talking about the UFOs and the entities, there were some interesting stories in there. And this is where it gets more complicated because of the experiencers who document stories from horrific to angelic. It's the entire spectrum. My experience has just been one of curiosity and one to say, get your game on and become more telepathically aware, because you are missing stuff by being distracted by the various things we are distracted by. But our telepathic skill is what will get us out of this issue that we are steeped in now of not knowing what's really going on. And not only that, it's not about reading the ETs, about reading the people you are around, or who are around you, the entities alongside ETs that there are also present in our dimension. This stuff is around us, and the more we dumb down or numb out and try and deny it, the less we are able to actually become competitive, aware, and enlightened or educated about the greater universe that surrounds us. And that's just basic planning ahead survival.
Yeah, especially as things unfold, because we're not in Kansas anymore. Things are really going to go exponential, in my opinion, as this final judgment is passed. The system that we currently are living under on this world is corrupt. I mean, it just is. And it has to be dismantled so that it can be rebuilt back into the original, more of the original blueprint. Yeah. I told you, the war in heaven came here a long, long time ago. And so this has been a fortress of evil for the fallen ones for thousands of years. But at some point they became imprisoned here. Rather than just kick them out and have them set up shop someplace else, they were imprisoned here. It's one of the reasons the Book of Enoch was not included in the Bible, because it's inconvenient, you know, it raises too many questions. In any case, they're in prison here, but they're still able to function. Just like, look, in the prisons of, for humans, you got all kinds of criminals running the enterprises in prisons. It's the same thing that's going on here on this planet. They're allowed to do this for a time. And then final judgment is passed. Their appeal process is over. And my opinion is they're going to get taken somewhere else, incarcerated somewhere else, because they're, like I said, they're just, otherwise they're going to just destroy all life on the planet. They're shutting down the ecosystem, you know? Anyway,
it seems the ETs, the benevolent, like the ones who approached the children in Zimbabwe, were saying, you have to fix this. This is happening to your planet. And of course, the kids are going, me, myself, and I fix this.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But yeah, that's the message. That's a common theme.
Okay, but okay. All right. Since you brought it up, that's true. It's one of the things that was mentioned. One of the part of my assignment 2021 was, And I did bring this up on Coast to Coast twice. Catholics call this intercession. I didn't know what that meant until recently. I mean, it's all part of this process. I'm learning as I go along too, but I'm also helping to educate others. So we're in a position to ask for God and the angels of light, who are still loyal to creation, to intercede on our behalf regarding the crimes of the fallen angels and their minions. Again, this to me is it's part of a legal process, but this is this asking for assistance or this intercession is very, very real. And apparently a lot of people know about it, but I really didn't understand it when they first asked me. I was asked by a group I don't even fully understand, but let's just call them benevolent beings, asked me to use my voice on radio and the internet to ask others who are open to it, to ask them for help. Again, sounds pretty simple, right? But they told me, they go, well, if you do that, you're going to get kicked off the radio. And I'm like, so what? And they said, yeah, but if you keep pushing too hard, they're going to try and kill you. I'm like, whoa, okay, wait a second. That's not a good thing.
That's kind of serious.
Yeah, I've got a family. It's like, what are you talking about? And they said, well, you know, just be careful. We're just warning you that they're dangerous and they're very desperate. And when you start doing this, it's not even about you. It just, they feel threatened by this, by us asking for assistance from beings of light. And here's the other thing. Why would they even need to ask our permission? That's something called free will. We think we own this planet. I'm not sure we do, but the bottom line is there's a dynamic here. All right. Again, it took me time to fully appreciate why would they even ask me to do this? Because if we don't ask for them to assist us and they just show up and start doing it, that really will destabilize society, because a lot of people are going to say, holy crap, we're being invaded. They're not going to understand the context of it all. And they're going to feel very much left out of the process, et cetera. So anyway, this is complicated.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. And logistically it is, it's a bit of an issue, but the benevolent beings, the bright side of the equation, is very patient, I guess, because they have eternity. You know, I know that sounds stupid to even say that, but, you know, our lifespans have been so incredibly shortened here. It didn't used to be that way. I mean, you would think, okay, if you live 1,000 years, that sounds like a long time. Apparently not. Apparently, we're supposed to live for thousands of years in each lifetime. In each vessel, whatever, that, you know, if we so choose, if you don't do something stupid, right? That's just part of the original design. But as we've been enslaved and adulterated and manipulated, now our lifespan is much, much shorter. Our level of cognition, not intelligence, but our ability, literally our ability to think, has been diminished by design so that we would be more compliant, you know. I don't even really like talking about this because it bothers me so much, but I know I'm not upset, all right, with you or anybody. It really upsets me that we're in this situation, all of us. And a lot of people don't even know. And more importantly, they don't want to know. So I've learned over the years, you know, I don't just walk up to people and have this level of conversation with them? You can't.
You were, mm-hmm. I think, tutored, taught, instructed,
yeah.
programmed, and groomed to be, as you are doing now, an instrument
yeah.
for information. And that's what you're doing. You're passing along information. It's up to each and every one who listens, who hears this, who shares it, whether they yeah. want to believe, choose to believe. It's up to them. Giving information is, you know, that's just unfortunately like the Internet Archive. Okay.
So the benevolent beings don't always respect your free will. They don't try to impose anything on you. Unless it's just like, you know, hey, don't walk off the cliff, knucklehead. It's one of those kind of things. And you really got to be out of this intersection now kind of thing.
Yes.
But generally speaking, that they respect our free will. As opposed to those who are on the dark side, the malevolent beings do not respect our free will. That is something that people have asked me before. You know, well, how do you know the difference? How could you not? I mean, from my opinion, how could you not? They're not that good at hiding their true intentions. Even though they might be wolves in sheep's clothing, it's pretty obvious at some point what they really want. Especially now, they're all out in the open. Things have really changed dramatically in the last decade or so. It's not like there's more information. It's just we have more access to information. It's always been there. And there's stuff that they are clearly still hiding stuff. And that's why we have these kind of conversations publicly. But the thing is, most people in the public will not respond to something like this unless it comes from an authority figure. That's where my biggest problem is with Washington, D.C. I was told that there's no way that anybody in any one of those federal agencies is going to come on the record and say, yes, we cannot control the airspace over the nation's capital. It's porous. There's portals everywhere. And these crafts are coming and going. We're not even sure exactly who everybody is and or what they want. I mean, that would not go well. Well, the way it was described to me by a Mr. Rothschild working at Podesta Mattoon Law Firm in D.C. was that he says, let's just say somebody from the FBI comes up to has a press conference and says, yeah, we know this is going on and there's nothing we can do about it. And he says, well, not only is the FBI going to be held accountable by the public, but that particular agent mm-hmm. is going to be hounded for the rest of his life. You know, it's like, well, when did you guys first figure it out? And what are you doing about it? What do you mean you can't? So I kind of understand the situation they're in, but at the same time, I'm not okay with this at all. It's not even just about the secrecy. It's about we can't live like this. We can't keep having this. You can't have it both ways, you know? It's either a threat or it isn't. And I know damn well it is because of the way they behave.
Okay, you said you've had multiple opportunities yeah. to share your information on Coast to Coast. Yeah. Has there been any pushback in terms of the military, the helicopters?
No, because I kind of don't talk to as much about the Washington, D.C. I have mentioned it so many times on that show. It's like, here's what I think needs to happen. Is a documentary needs to be produced. I'm not really great at video editing, but I'm slowly putting something together. I have asked literally hundreds of people on LinkedIn that are in the media, that are documentarians or film producers or you name it, including people even in television news. Mm-hmm. they really don't want to talk about this.
George Knapp has his
Nope. George was given my little brief package, my press release. He ignored it.
Okay.
All right. So, and I, whatever. I mean, like, again, I respect people's free will. You don't have to do anything. But at the same time, in a way, they are accessories to this ongoing criminal behavior. You can't say that the airspace is controlled for humans. But it's open, it's completely porous for unidentified aerial phenomena. This is such a stupid situation, and at some point it's got to stop. It really does, because we don't know. And one of the guys I interviewed had said this, Bob Dean. He worked for NATO and Pentagon and FEMA and all this stuff. And he's kind of out there. He's gone now. But he and I got to be buddies. And he called me. The one group that they, the Pentagon, NATO, was concerned about from off-planet are the ones that look exactly like us. Naturally, because they can
blend in.
They can easily. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they obviously have. They have been for a long time. And that's the thing. You know, people, when I say fallen angels, people don't realize what I'm talking about. They can look exactly like us. And they, because we're all related anyway. And yeah, I know there's different races and stuff. And some of them obviously are not going to blend in as easily, but they're all here. We're all involved in this together. When I say a war in heaven, it was more like a family feud. And that's the other thing that makes it really difficult. You know, I mean, when you have a family member that's acting out like that, rebellious, insurrectionist, whatever, and literally threatening other people, your first inclination is not going to be to kill them. You know, yes, incarcerate them. And more importantly, do your best to try and rehabilitate them. Because they're family. You don't, and I mean, just that's just, as a benevolent being, you want to try and help them so they don't hurt themselves or others anymore. And that's another reason why this is taking so damn long.
Okay, you mentioned Robert Dean.
Yeah.
He had some fascinating information, and Marcia Schaefer, who has the Beyond Zebra. Are you connected with Marcia? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was with him when he passed away. I knew his previous wife pretty well. So Bob and I got to be friends because there's not too many people, especially back in the day, that could have this level of conversation. I mean, he's very, he was, like, he didn't tell me anything secret other than the fact that one day he says to me, he goes, I told you I'm a Knight of Malta, didn't I? And this is back when his mind was still pretty sharp.
Yeah.
And I said, Bob, I don't even know what that is. And he goes, oh, okay. Okay. Well, naturally, I looked it up.
Like, I was going to say.
Oh. What? No, I mean, so there's a lot of different factions that serve the dark side, in my opinion. They're serving. Everybody knows about the Jesuits. But the Knights of Malta, man, some of the people like George Bush, I mean, he was the Knight of Malta. So not exactly what I consider to be warm and fuzzy people, but. So Bob was basically admitting to me, and I don't know why he brought it up, like, other than that he must have had something on his mind that he just wanted to tell me that he couldn't, because he had sworn a loyalty, an oath, not to just defend the Constitution, but whoever or whatever, the Knights of Malta, I guess, if they're loyal to the Vatican, that means that they're working directly for a fallen angel named Samael. And Samael is known by many different names. Most people in this audience would know him as Enki, or Iah, or Lucifer. So I know Zachariah Sitchin was a big proponent. He was out there doing a lot of public relations for this entity. And that's why he was so close with people at the Vatican. Because he made Enki sound like our savior. And he's anything but. For anybody who wants to know exactly what I'm talking about, because we can't go into the details right now, go to my Substack, robertstanley.substack.com, and click on Meet the Father of Lies. Or no, yeah, Meet the Father, yes, I'm sorry. Meet the Father of Lies? Yes, that's the new headline.
We're going to leave it at that, because okay. This is like a deep dive down the rabbit hole. Once you get started, there's so many different directions to go into, especially even on your Substack. It was like...
But here's the thing, and from my opinion, all of this stuff is holistic in its nature. It is, there's a web, a common theme thread that runs through everything, because everything is connected to everything else, in my opinion. And this reductionist mechanistic viewpoint that they have inculcated in most people only see things as segmented or separated. I see everything as being connected. And that's one of the reasons my stuff is really, like you said, it's very deep. very detailed. And I don't expect most people to ever read my stuff, let alone, you know, try and contemplate all the different pieces of the puzzle that I'm putting out there. But that's just, it's okay. That's what I was asked to do. That's what I'm doing. Look, I kind of feel bad for people when they start reading my stuff. They're like, what the hell did I just get myself into?
Okay, the last thing.
Not funny.
Who asked you? Who are your sources?
Okay, jeez. When I had the out-of-body experience and I met the father, he asked me to do something, to deliver a message to the boy's family, and which I did. And I really didn't understand what I was doing. I couldn't understand it at the time. Because I was able to accomplish that, I was given a lot more assignments. And I just to be clear, I'm not a religious person, but and a lot of times I'll use terms that are religious, but that doesn't mean that I am.
Right.
Okay, so who do I serve? Who do I work for? Is someone called Melchizedek, not the one in the Bible. That guy was a priest. He is a servant of the actual Melchizedek. It's a title. It means a king of righteousness. And that's who most people call him, Jesus. I just call him Father, whatever. But he is not a human. He is not an angel. He is an aspect, an emanation, or an avatar of God, directly from God. And the reason he was created is because of this ongoing conflict, the war in heaven. You don't need a savior. You don't need to be saved unless there's something really serious going on. Really serious. And so, for whatever reason, okay. I was in a position to help him, and so he's been, that's the thing, when you, if you do a little, it's a blessing, and it's a burden to be in my position. I'm not complaining, I'm just trying to explain to people, it's a very strange situation for me to be in, because I know a lot of people think it's just not real.
It dovetails John Foster's work and his,
yeah, no,
basically,
that's his, why, you know, he and I've been, we've been friends for years.
Yeah. Just, it's very, very closely aligned with his information, because he says, you know, read the book of Enoch. I can't tell you all this. This is my experience. And he has decades of memories of encounters and being taught and being guided. So, yeah, I just wanted to go back and substantiate that and have you repeat that for people who've listened this long. Okay.
Yes, I understand. Thank you.
So,
that's a qualifier.
Okay, but Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., that's the book available on Amazon. And then your Substack, where you've got a ton of information, Robert Substack. It's Robert Stanley at Substack.com.
So Covert Encounters actually was the second book. It's a lot more detailed. At some point it becomes redundant. But I would have to say that the conclusion of that second book, my conclusion about Washington, D.C., is shocking. It's 100 pages long, and it'll give you a whole nother insight as to, it's an extension of Rome, just like London, Rome, and the Vatican, and Washington, D.C. They're all linked. They're all exactly the same. Sister cities, just like a trifecta of evil. Anywho.
Hey, this has gone so many different directions, but wow. Wow. Okay. So, and if anybody gets on your Substack, it's going to do the same thing to them. Their head's going to spin.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's no way to sugarcoat it in my world. You just got to take the pill and hang on.
Okay. All right. Well, we've all been pilled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Robert, thank you. Thank you for for spending your time with me, and I appreciate the stories and the content, and I mean it's a rabbit hole, and it's just fascinating. Yeah. But it also in a lot of ways corroborates other experiencers who've had these encounters and these stories, and there's a wide range. There's that dark and the light, and you know the message once you've been connected to it. You know the difference, how it feels, how you feel.
And the old thing is, you can't serve two masters. You can't really play both sides, because you're just going to fool. You're not fooling anybody but yourself. And I'm not trying to be righteous about it. I'm just saying everybody has to make a choice, and especially in the whatever time we have left here under the current circumstances. It's really everybody's got to make a choice.
Well, I think the world is a whole lot more interesting than most people give it credit. And one way or the other, you stumble into this stuff and you start seeing more interesting things. So I can't remember. Yep. What was it, the curse that may you live in interesting times?
That's a Chinese curse, yeah.
I think that's where we are. So somebody made it stick. And more power to them, too, okay? Hey, you, thank you. I'm going to let you go. And for anyone who wants to connect,
Wendy,
I'll put links in the description for the show. And we may have to talk with you again because this is just like a can of worms you opened.
I know. Thanks for spending time with me. And keep up the good work, Wendy.
Thank you.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big on everything for your next staining project when you shop at Menards. Transform your home in one weekend with exterior stain and sealer from Dutch Boy. It provides one coat protection on decks, fences, siding, and outdoor furniture, and repels rain after just 4 hours of application. That means quicker results, saving you both time and money. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.